All right. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Three Plastic Surgeons and a Microphone Plus One. I'm Sam DeJuricar from Dallas, Texas. And as always, I'm joined by Salvatore Pacella from La Jolla, California, Sam Ree from Bergen County, New Jersey. And our plus one today is Dr. Larry Tong from Toronto. Welcome, gentlemen. Today, we're going to talk about an interesting topic. To our viewers, we all know how important it is to, for everyone as they're picking their plastic surgeon to analyze before and after photos. But today, we're going to talk about a topic that's recently been getting more attention, which is deception in plastic surgery photos. Before we get into the meat of the topic, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Tong, who's going to read our usual disclaimer.
Thanks. So for our listeners, this show is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This show is for information purposes only. Treatment and results may vary based upon the circumstances, situation, and medical judgment after appropriate discussion. Always seek advice of your surgeon or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding medical care. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking advice because of something on this show.
Okay, so I'm going to just throw it out to all of you guys. Is it important when you're seeing an aesthetic surgery patient that they have photos of yours that they can look at? And how they typically found you? Sam Ree, when somebody comes in and they haven't been a direct referral from one of your patients, what do they usually tell you is the reason why they pick you to be their surgeon?
If they have no direct contact with what? Say that.
So let's say they're not a direct referral. How is it that they picked you to be their surgeon or to do a consult with you?
Right. Two things. Usually reviews, honestly, are one big way. Like they'll see a review of me somewhere. Like they'll Google and look at surgeons and look at the reviews. And then the second thing, which we're actually talking about today, is they'll go do the Google, find plastic surgeons, and then look at their before and after pictures.
Okay. So then, and is it normally social media where they're finding these pictures of yours? Is it on your website? Like, where are they typically finding that?
So there are two major sources, social media and website, like as you mentioned. And I am, full disclosure, probably the worst when it comes to publishing before and after photos. They're one of those things which I find kind of a pain in the ass to do. It does annoy me. And this is a specific pet peeve of mine, what we're talking about today about deception in before and after photos. And so one of the number one things that I hear from patients is you need to post more and more and more and more and more before and after photos. And that's probably one of the biggest feedback things that I get from people. Like, you do good work. Why are you not posting more before and afters?
Then Dr. Pacella, are there any circumstances under which you would alter a patient's photos before you publish it either on social media or your website? What is your thought process on that? And what's the philosophy of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons? Is that acceptable ever?
No, it's never acceptable. I think, it's an ethical standard to be as transparent in your photographs as much as you can. Things like, doing erasing shadows, erasing scars, that's clearly an ethical violation, ethically suspect. And I believe our societies would agree with me on that. However, I think there are certain things you can't necessarily control in standardization of photography. So for example, I've been to your facility, Dr. Jajarkar in Dallas. You have a very standardized way of taking photographs because you have the infrastructure to do that. You have all patients come into the same photographic studio to do this. In my office, we don't have that kind of resource. So we have a black background in each exam room where we take photographs. And the lighting is not exactly the same in every single room. I try to control for that a little bit with a ring flash. Even if you look at my photos, some of the photographs, the lighting in the photographs is different just by ambiently being in a different room. And so, I think that's something that the surgeon can't necessarily control for many times. So I said, looking over photographs with patients in my office or on my website, I say, the this is clearly, you know, different lighting. However, you know, look at the scar line, look at this jawline. You can't necessarily hide that with different lighting. So I think it's a challenge.
Dr. Tong, so you're really a specialist. You're really well known for your facial aesthetic procedures. How do you balance the desire, you know, to show before and after pictures with the ability to maintain patient confidentiality? Because I have to imagine you have patients who want you to show pictures of themselves or want to show, like, do you ever modify pictures in a way to hide their identity?
So that's a great question. So for our viewers and listeners, you should understand that we are not, as surgeons, just able to publish any of your photos without your consent. So it's very important to obtain consent whenever we're even thinking about putting anybody's photos anywhere. So that's a given. I know that Sam and Sal, you guys all do that. Just for the listeners, that's something that is a must. But beyond that, when we ask patients if we can use their photos, sometimes they will say, no, I'm not comfortable with that because of, you know, whatever reason. Sometimes it's because if we're doing like a photo of their breast augmentation, they'll have a tattoo. So sometimes we will offer to Photoshop out the tattoo. And I think that if it's not, on breast, I think that's perfectly acceptable. On the face, sometimes we'll put black squares on the eyes. But when I do that, I will always tell the patient, thank you. We will do a mock-up of it. Basically, we will show them what would be published, and then they have to sign off on it before we put it up there. So yes, sometimes we do make alterations, but that is based on the patient's desires and approval as well.
Dr. Pacella, you put your hand up.
Yes. Figured visually it's easier than not. Question for the others. So I know of surgeons that are very into social media. Whenever they take a photograph, even a preoperative photograph before the surgery, they have a long release form saying that they can use this. Okay. How do you guys do this? So in my practice, you know, we have a consent form for photography, clearly, for their medical record. But we also have a specific consent for publishing on the web or social media. So I will decide ahead of time, I will decide after the result is in, whether or not I want to use photographs, and then I'll ask them specifically secondarily. Do you guys get a blanket consent for every single patient to publish? Or do you do it specifically, individually? Oh, we should publish this person's photograph or result.
I have a blanket, and it's very explicit about being able to be published or used with, you know, and there's a caveat about, you know, as Larry said, to not publish anything that's specifically identifiable to that patient. And it's very clear when patients register that all of these things are there. And I do have some patients that will say, well, this is okay, but maybe this is not okay, like specific situation. And we'll include that into the consent. But other than that, most patients really don't have a huge problem. I think it is an issue in terms of facial procedures where patients are personally identifiable in those pictures. And that's where I go specifically to patients and will ask additionally, are you okay with this? Or if they have something distinctive about their body or something that, you know, a tattoo or something, for instance, that is very identifiable, I will also go to a patient just to be sure that they're comfortable with that. But most of the time, our consent is very clear about that up front. And if a patient has an issue with it, then a patient will mention it at the time that they read through this. It's not like we're hiding it. It's actually pretty, it's not like, you know, one of those things that you just sign at the bottom, you know, I accept. It's like, it's very, very, very clear.
Same in our practice. It's a blanket consent that they'll do before we do any sort of procedure on them. But it's really clearly stated in there that if they choose not to sign it, it won't impact their care even in the slightest. I'd say it's 50-50 whether or not people actually sign at my practice. There's a lot of people that don't want to have their stuff floating out there on social media or on the web. And that's fine. I totally respect that. Much like Larry, if it's a tattoo, and that's kind of where I was going, we routinely remove those on social media before we post it. Social media, and I think you guys would agree with this, has totally changed the way that we practice plastic surgery. But I mean, it used to be that I would sort of pick my like best of everything and put them on my website. Social media requires you to just keep like putting tons and tons and tons and tons of new material out there. You have to obscure genitalia, you have to obscure nipples. I think it's good to get rid of tattoos for patients. The problem though is with all of these filters that are in these programs that are out there, you'll see patients coming in with other surgeons' work where if it's a body shot, they may have made the waist smaller, they may have made the hips bigger, they may have totally obscured the scars, or they'll bring in their wish picks and you guys know people in your own life who every picture they post of themselves, which is frequent on social media, has some sort of filter on it where they look nothing like they actually do in real life as well. And so it's tough because we're in the before and after game where we're trying to make sure we give people an accurate representation of what we are going to look like. But patients' wish picks are based off of distorted images of reality.
That is the biggest issue. And I would say two things. One is, there is deception in before and afters where it's clearly unethically edited, like you mentioned. Like, it looks like the after picture was shot through a Snapchat filter, where it's so fake and so obviously not real. And like you said, I've had patients who showed me before and after pictures of other surgeons, and I can only say, I know this surgeon looks like they achieved like a miracle of God result on this figure that looks sort of like your figure before, but that after is nothing based in reality whatsoever. I'm sorry. And they take it for gospel. They just believe that if they see it on social media, this is real. And that's something that I wrestle with. The second thing though is that I have engaged in what you might call deception in plastic surgery in my before and after photos. For example, I have been guilty of shooting on table results for patients, right? And we know that the on table result is not necessarily what you will see later. And I do that for social media, you know? And other plastic surgeons do this all the time. You see it in the White Journal, our main research journal in plastic surgery, people who have facelifts or other work. And I can tell you like 10 plastic surgeons where the before, they have no makeup, they look like crap, like they just woke up. And then their after pick, like their hair is done, the lighting looks amazing, like they colored their hair and they look fantastic. And we all know the plastic surgeons do that. So, I mean, honestly, I do it, but only because like a lot of my before pics for stuff like that is shot just before a procedure per se. And so they don't have makeup and they are not sort of looking great. And then when they come in on their post-ops, they're made up really nicely and you know, they look good. And so either on purpose or inadvertently, I am creating deceptive before and after pictures just because of that.
Sam, do you use oil in your post-operative on table pics, or just in your personal life, in bodybuilding, or do you use both?
I can honestly say I've never used oil in my post-operative photos, but I may have used a spray bottle of alcohol to give it that shiny appearance. But you know, it's one of those things where it's the same thing where you know. It's like an Instagram filter to make your lips look like they have lipstick on them that women use. Like it's
noticing he didn't answer the question. Notice he didn't answer the question.
I feel like Dr. Tong wants to say something and he just can't interject his way in because we're talking so much.
No, what I was going to say is for our listeners and their viewers, we talk about deception, but some of the things that are very common, think should be mentioned. So lighting differences. So if a before has very dark lighting and then the after has, you know, very good lighting, that's going to show a better result. The other is the angles. If the angles are not the same before and after, then they can be manipulated to look much better to suit the result. Other things such as, like Sam said, having, you know, makeup all done versus not makeup done. All those things can be enhancing the appearance. When somebody does a facelift, when you look at their before and after photos, the side view should have the hair behind the ear so you can see any potential scars in and around the preauricular region, areas in front of the ear, which is commonly where an incision will be placed. And if that's covered, then, you know, I think that's in some ways deceptive. So, you know, consistency of the photos and being able to show all the areas where scars might be, aside from more blatant things like filters and erasing things, are sort of softer types of deceptions that that can be used to make results better.
I think one of the things that are similar is on tummy tucks. Like when you hide that incision using underwear, which, I mean, I guess when you're doing Instagram, I think one of the biggest things which you mentioned is trying to cover genitals and private parts and make it, you know, not safe for work. Like you're hiding some of the biggest issues that you would want to see in terms of a surgeon's handiwork. What does that tummy tuck scar look like? And yet I constantly see all of these high-waisted underwear after patients where you have no idea like what that scar looks like. And that's the sort of thing that, is it wrong? I'm not going to say it's wrong. Is it deceptive? I guess you could call it deceptive. We're all trying to show our best, like, I know we're all trying to put our best foot forward and we're all as surgeons trying to highlight what we do. But I think it, and like most ethicists would say, there's a kind of a gray area here. And if you see someone consistently sort of being deceptive or very deceptive, or they show nothing but, you know, things that clearly are not the same before and after, or they're showing certain, like, for example, I know a surgeon who all of the after pictures are basically the patient in real life. Like they show video of them dancing around or something like that, but they don't, you don't even see what they're, you know, they could be wearing a compression garment underneath. You don't know what they really look like. All you see is this really slick social media post, like before, you know, frumpy and, you know, not attractive. And then after, they're like doing a pirouette, like in some ballroom or something. And you're like, wow, that's what I want to look like. I mean, even something as simple as like sucking your gut in before and after a picture, like those all make huge differences. Like you could, if you just ask the patient, take a deep breath in and hold it when I shoot this picture. I mean, how much of a difference are you going to see on a before and after for liposuction? Like tremendous. So these are all kind of things that, I mean, like I said, it's a gray area. I feel like I've been on one side of it and I can't say I'm blameless. But on the other hand, I also see a lot of people who are just consistently are over at least a personal line that I draw in terms of what deception is in before and after surgeries, pictures.
So then my question then for all of you guys, and we'll maybe start with Dr. Pacella and kind of work around. What advice would you give patients? Because we've talked about all of the different ways that we can be deceptive, yet we know people look at pictures before and afters to at least make some initial decisions as to whom they should screen to be their surgeons. So if you're going to talk to a friend who is trying to find a plastic surgeon, how would you tell them to interpret photos that they're seeing? How would you have them incorporate those photos into their overall decision-making process?
I mean, I think I would say, you know, you want to be a student of some photography. So in looking at before and afters, I would suggest to patients, you know, they should be in the same position. You look for things like makeup. You look for things that cannot be hidden by shadows or light. So, for example, think contour of the breast, contour of the dorsum of the nose. Those are all things that cannot really be, say, adjusted with the lighting in the room necessarily. Right? I think you have to be careful if results are exactly perfect in 100% of the photos. You have to look for things like scars. You have to look for things like subtle contour deformities. And then I would be very suspect of standardized before photos in the exam room and post-operative photos sitting in a hot tub. You know, I mean, just it's not apples to oranges.
Dr. Tong?
Yeah, I agree with those things. Like I said before, make sure the lighting is the same. One thing that is often used is the magnification for body procedure, doing liposuction. You will see that the after photo is cropped in a way that makes the entire body look slightly smaller. So, you know, you want to try to look at landmarks and make sure they're the same size. Like if you look at maybe somebody's liposuction of the neck and it looked way better, take a look at the side view, look at their ears, make sure they're the same size, because if they're not, then maybe some manipulation has gone on. Look at the, like Sal had just said, the quality of the photo. If the photo afterwards looks like super professional and really glossy and everything looks very smooth, then, you know, you might suspect there's been a filter put on. And like I said before, make sure, you know, the hair, if it's a facial procedure, is out of the way, make sure the clothing is out of the way. That might be blocking potential scars. So angle, lighting, size of the photo, and the potential for, you know, covering up of scars, I think are important things, basic things.
Dr. Reed.
I would tell patients, listen, you don't have to be an expert on detecting fakery, because there's just too many ways surgeons can fool people. So I would say take all of the before and afters, use them as a data point. Like, sure, look at them. If there's something that doesn't sit right with you, like, wow, they all look perfect, as Sal said. Like, God, everyone looks like amazing. Or if you're like, oh, like, yeah, these kind of look hinky, the before and afters. Like, you can sort it. Like, if there's a gut feeling about something not really authentic or right about the before and afters, that can be a telltale sign. But even then, like, listen, I can be fooled, and I've been doing this for a long time. Like, I would say just take it as a grain of salt. Don't ever, like, go with someone as a surgeon just because their before and afters were awesome. Like, use that as one piece of data, like, but look at everything else. How, you know, how is a surgeon communicating with you? You know, what are their reviews like? What is their office like? Have you talked to anyone else who's had work done by this surgeon? Like, it's totally, I think one of the best sort of things that patients have done, which surprised me that more patients don't, is like, can I talk to someone who's had work done by you? Like, that would be amazing. Like, I love when when patients do that. Like, I feel like there's way more information that you can get about a surgeon than just a before and after. Like, yes, they can be helpful. Yes, it's really easy because you don't have to do anything. You can just click on your phone. You don't have to do any real investigative work or thinking just to do that. But that's probably, if you're only going to use before and afters, you're probably not, you're shorting yourself, and you might get yourself into trouble by choosing someone based only on that.
I think that's all great advice. I think Dr. Spicella and Tong have told us how to look for photos that are more real. But Dr. Rhee is totally right in the sense that photos are just one piece of the puzzle. The more you can find out about a surgeon, the more you can find out about their office, their interaction with other patients, the better off you're going to be. Well, before we sign off, do any of you gentlemen have anything else to add? Anything that you think that we need to touch on, or do you think we're good to call it?
That was the best tip ever, is to, like, put a nice glossy sheen with the alcohol on the post-ops. If there's one thing I from the podcast.
That's just the immediate post-op. That's just the immediate post-op. That's all. All right. And I think Dr. Pacella just said something, but luckily his audio is lagging and I have no idea what it was. So, he's muted.
No, he's totally muted. Sorry, my dog was barking, so I muted myself. So do you know what the second rule of CrossFit is?
Is that a euphemism?
No. The second rule of CrossFit, always use oil while doing CrossFit.
Exactly. All right, gentlemen. It's a pleasure as always. Until next time.